Welcome back to episode 36, no longer breaking the plane. We got some news here. First and foremost, I got to address a whole bunch of things right now. I'm your host, Hogan. My co-host, Burge, unfortunately, is unavailable today. It's July 4th week. There's lots of crazy stuff going on. Family things are out and about. He's not here this week. That's okay. We'll excuse him for once. Well, I won't excuse him. You guys out there are going to have to excuse him. However, I have somebody here who's a good friend. He's always on the podcast as we love having him. Manish, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Hogan. I love the new logo. I love the new name. I'm wondering when I can expect some merch at my front door.
Ooh,
hats,
okay.
T-shirts, any of that stuff coming my way?
Oh, buddy, you're going to be the first one to get it all. You're going to get everything you want and more. So trust me, you don't have to beg for that. It's coming as soon as we get the merch store going. But yeah, our new name, Between the Tackles. We are no longer breaking the plane. And for those of you out there wondering, we kind of announced it on Twitter a few days ago. We've been updating some of the handles and whatnot. If you're curious as to what the story behind this is actually a couple weeks ago, we got an email from a couple of other guys who have Breaking the Plane trademarked for their website, their merchandise, and they just started a podcast. They reached out to us. They were very, very kind. So there's no ill will there. I don't want anybody going and blowing them up or anything. If anything, go over there and show those guys some love. Breaking the Plane, those guys, we wish them the best of the best. They're following us now. They're subscribed to us. We love it. So it's all appreciation across the board. And for me personally, Between the Tackles, I was going to say I'm a former fatty. I'm still a fatty, but I am a former lineman, and Between the Tackles is right up my alley. That's where we're getting into lineman terms here. I love it. I love it. I love it. So yeah, that's the story behind Between the Tackles. And like I said, I couldn't be happier and more excited to bring this to you with Manish today. We're going to get down to it. We're going to break down the NFC South today. But before I get ahead of myself, I want to jump on some news articles that we've been perusing. You know, it's a slow time of the year with the NFL offseason. But Manish, I got to get your thoughts. First and foremost, the NFL, I mean, they're rolling in so much cash, so this should just be chump change to them. But they just got slapped with the lawsuit for the DirecTV Sunday Ticket, $4.7 billion. And I believe the article I read said they could actually be multiplied up to three times that amount. So it could be upwards towards like 12 or even like $14 billion, I think I saw the final number being. Do you got thoughts on that? I mean, that's absolutely crazy to think about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically, this isn't over because the NFL will appeal. And you're right. The $4.5 billion number that was initially put out there, it's actually triple that. And look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to pretend to be a lawyer. But Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk is a lawyer. And he's the guy who I read kind of simplify things and mention that in actuality, if the NFL does lose its appeal, in effect would be a judgment of over $14 billion. So if you did subscribe to Sunday Ticket, you're probably going to get some money coming your way as part of a class action suit. Again, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm unfamiliar with. Like, so going into the weeds would be difficult for me to explain, but to have it distilled down to the fact that those in the class action lawsuit, those who bought Sunday Ticket for a particular time frame could get, you know, a fair amount of money back, it is a huge deal. It's the biggest lawsuit judgment against the NFL that I can recall. It's certainly a lot larger than the concussion settlement about a decade plus ago. So yeah, Pretty significant. It's a multi-billion dollar organization. Of course, owners aren't, you know, crying for money, but you know, judgment in excess of $14 billion is certainly newsworthy for sure. And it will impact, you know, people, like real people that actually bought the Sunday Ticket.
Yeah. And I mean, the big thing for me, for first and foremost, I'm regretting not being a Sunday Ticket purchaser so I could just get free money from the NFL. I mean, I wish I could be a part of that. This brings me back to, like, I remember when, what was it, Red Bull got sued because of their logo, like the Red Bull gives you wings. I was like, I drank a bunch of Red Bulls back in the day. I'll take a check for like $100, please. But yeah, no, it's wild to see that. And especially it's going to be interesting to see going forward the impact that this is going to have on the NFL, where they are, you know, gung-ho and crazy about the TV rights, what they're doing right now, especially with YouTube TV essentially taking over the Sunday Ticket deal. And then on top of that, too, Netflix is, you know, reporting that they're going to be, you know, streaming some games, I think, going forward. I don't know if it was this year or next year, but either way, Netflix is in on it. YouTube's in on it. Pretty much the streaming wars are constantly going to be going on. And if the NFL gets hit heavy with this, it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes going forward. But yeah, like I said, going forward, there's a team that we want to talk about that, Manish, you're very familiar with. We got Aaron Rodgers that we love, 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 love to just praise him so much on this podcast, obviously. He apparently was in Egypt. Is that what the story we're getting right now with him being missing from training or the mandatory mini camps and whatnot?
Yeah, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a former teammate of his, worked out with him recently. And I don't know if he inadvertently spilled the beans or it wasn't a big deal, but Aaron Rodgers was on vacation during the Jets' mandatory minicamp in Egypt. And look, I mean, there's a million things to say about Aaron Rodgers. He's certainly got a lot of opinions off the football field. I respect, you know, everyone's right to think whatever they want, whether it's politics or, you know, whatever other area that Rodgers kind of dips his toes in. So I don't think it's about that. I think when you look specifically at this incident, is missing 2 days of practice going to impact Aaron Rodgers' chemistry with his teammates? Absolutely not. I think it's silly. And I think it'd be disingenuous if you said that it would. I don't necessarily think it's about that. Yes, did he have good participation in the voluntary portion of the offseason program, the OTAs? He did, pretty much was there, you know, 80-90% of the time. But the idea of your leader, your captain, not being there for something that is, you know, pretty clear, mandatory. Mandatory means you must attend. I think that's the epitome of poor leadership. And again, I don't want to get into the other aspects of Aaron Rodgers and his views on a number of different things that he's been very public about, because I don't really think it's about that. There's certain things that I agree with him on, certain things I disagree with him on. But just from a purely football perspective, it's poor leadership. And I know that the people that are defending Aaron Rodgers, and it's a segment of the Jets fan base, it's not every fan. I think there's a, you know, a large contingent of the fan base that, you know, the rational, fair-minded people, and they realize that that's not you know, a good look for a leader. But then you do have people that will defend him to the hilt. You know, if you have a crazy uncle, you know, a lot of people in the family are going to defend him because he's their crazy uncle, right? So I think there's dysfunction, and I don't want that to be misconstrued, but the culture within the Jet organization is not a winning culture, and this is a microcosm of that. That's not to say that they can't win games, they can't do well this year, but a winning organization, an organization that does things the right way, does not allow somebody to do this. And, you know, the quick response for a lot of people is, well, you know, a couple of years ago, Tom Brady took a, or maybe it was last year, took a week off during a mandatory training camp. Yeah. But he was dealing with an intensely personal matter. He was going through a bad divorce. I think if Aaron Rodgers was dealing with something personal, whether it was with something dealing with him, something dealing with his family, a close friend, you know, something of that ilk, I don't think anybody would criticize him. But the reality of this particular situation is that he wasn't going through a divorce. There wasn't some kind of you know, family emergency or, you know, friend emergency or something personal in that regard that he was going through. He was just going to vacation. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers has made nearly $350 million in his career. So I think that he can afford the change fee if he needed to change his flight. If he booked this a few months ago, and it's so, you know, it just so happened that it overlapped during the 2 days of Jets train mini camp, I think he could have changed his flight and gone a few days later. There's a 4 or 5 week down period that we're in right now at the end of mini camp and before training camp, ample time to enjoy yourself overseas and however you want to do it. But he clearly prioritized going on vacation rather than spending time with his teammates. And again, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be good when the season starts. That's not the point. The larger point is that if you are a leader, you are there for mandatory events. And I look, you know, there's a famous saying, I think it was Bill Parcells, Jimmy Johnson, maybe both of them, that said that you don't treat each player the same, but you treat them fairly. No, I just think that this does not fall under that umbrella. It's a mandatory event. You have played 4 snaps for your new team. The other chapter to the Brady story, Hogan, was that not only had Tom Brady won a boatload of rings, you know, prior to coming to Tampa, but he had already won a Super Bowl for Tampa when he took time off. Aaron Rodgers has done absolutely nothing for the Jets. He's played four snaps. Not his fault, of course, he got hurt. But that being said, he has a lot to prove. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he has a lot to prove with this organization. I just think that the way that the Jets have handled this shows weak leadership. Aaron Rodgers showing weak leadership. It stems from the top. That's ownership. That's front office. It stems and flows downward. And I think that the culture that they have created for Aaron Rodgers, the allowances that they have allowed him to take, it's all rooted in desperation. The Jets have not made the playoffs in 13 consecutive seasons. It's the longest playoff drought in North American sport, pro professional sports. They are so hungry and so starved for a winner that they are essentially allowing Aaron Rodgers to do what he wants, carte blanche. Now, I don't think he's the general manager. I thought, you know, talk of that was really hyperbole and overblown. But I do think that there are a lot of parallels that you can make in a situation that's happening right now in a different sport, and that's LeBron James and the Lakers. You see LeBron's fingerprints all over significant choices and decisions in that organization. And I think the Lakers, frankly, are a dysfunctional organization right now. Clearly not in their history, but right now they are. I just don't think that's the right way to, you know, to run a successful franchise, a successful organization. When the Jets general manager took over, he said he wanted the best culture in sports. I think if you polled 31 other fan bases, they would say that the Jets are far from having the best culture in the NFL, let alone in sports. So I think it's an unfortunate situation. Again, I don't think missing 2 days of practice has a tangible impact on the play on the field. I just think that if you're Aaron Rodgers and you truly want to be the leader, even though he has embraced the younger players and he's corrected mistakes that he made in Green Bay, you have to show up for these events, unless, of course, there's some kind of extenuating circumstance, personal circumstance. There are going to be people that are going to defend him, criticize the people that are critiquing him, criticizing me for even saying it. But I just think that if you're objective about it and looking at this fairly, and you're a leader, you do not do this to go on vacation overseas.
No, I agree with you, because at the end of the day, you know, Aaron Rodgers has that stigma attached to him where the end of his tenure with Green Bay followed him to New York, right? Where, like you said, we're not going to get into his personal beliefs or his details or anything like that. But you look at, what was it, a couple of years ago with the whole Eskimo retreat blackout thing that he did where people were just like, really? And then, but on top of that too, the persona that he brought to New York, where it was one of his first, you know, introductory press conferences where he's like, hey, that single Lombardi trophy in there looks pretty lonely. Let's go get another one. And then, like you said, granted, the four snaps injury out of his control to an extent, but to put that target on your back and then to go ahead and do these things, like you said, being a Patriots fan, first and foremost, I look at Tom Brady. Yeah. Like you said, I was ready to throw any excuse to the sun with him when it came to missing camp or anything like that, because it was like the dude won six Super Bowls. Like, if anybody has a reason to do whatever the hell he wants, Brady's earned that right. Where Rodgers, yeah, he's won a Super Bowl. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame. I would definitely consider him one of the best QBs to ever play the game, just from a pure talent, athletic, everything standpoint. He's got everything. But you put that stigma on yourself to put yourself on that pedestal to get knocked down. And I think he's only hurting himself getting knocked down by going to Egypt, going in his little blackout thing and all that. And the Jets, like you said, don't have the track record, especially the last 20 years without the wins, to be like, oh yeah, you can go do that. No, they want to win and they want to win now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I was very, very, I never want to see anybody get hurt, but the fact that Rodgers got hurt as early as he did with his Jets tenure, I was so curious to see how they were going to do last year. And we'll see what happens this year if he continues, you know, if he's going to be the starter going forward, which he will be, but, you know, just throwing it out there.
It was such an odd dynamic you touched on last year. He didn't play 99.9% of the season, yet he was the focal point the entire season. And I'm not saying it's because he brought it on himself. I don't think that's fair. I mean, you know, he had a weekly spot with McAfee, and he's entitled to that. He's entitled to his opinion. But I always felt during the season that somebody was being disingenuous. Maybe it was just the umbrella of the franchise, but this idea that they were selling that he could come back. I have no doubt that Aaron Rodgers worked his butt off to get healthy, to get in the best possible condition he could to eventually play. But the notion that he could come back at the end of last season, it's just not realistic. It's you know, if you know anything about medicine or if you've ever injured yourself and you've gone through physical therapy, sure, you know, none of us are the caliber of athlete that Aaron Rodgers is, but the body takes a certain amount of time to heal when you injure certain body parts. And no, you know, accelerated type of surgery or different type of surgery for the Achilles, which Rodgers had, is going to change that. Your body needs to heal, and then you do have to recondition yourself. So I always thought that this idea that the organization was selling that he would come back, and maybe, you know, to some extent, his own words suggested that. And I have no problem with him being optimistic because that drives people in rehab to get back. But I always thought that was an odd dynamic because he wasn't going to play. The notion that he was going to play in an actual regular season football game the same season that he tore his Achilles was ludicrous. And I think that every fan base outside the Jets fan base knew that. Every other follower of the NFL knew that. And I think that, you know, a large portion of the Jet fan base knew that too. But there was a contingent among the Jets followers that held on to this belief, well, we can sneak into the playoffs. We're going to have Aaron Rodgers and make a run. And I think that things are kind of repeating itself. If you look at the narrative and the talking points this summer versus last summer, very similar. The Jets are they a Super Bowl contender? Can they make a run? To that, I'll say this. Aaron Rodgers is my favorite quarterback in my lifetime. No disrespect to Tom Brady. You know, for a long time, I loved Peyton Manning. But just from a pure skill set standpoint, not from a clutch standpoint, because Tom Brady will never be surpassed in that. In big moments, nobody will ever be better than Tom Brady, at least in the rest of my life. But just from a talent standpoint, at his best, I don't think anybody was better than Aaron Rodgers. To me, Aaron Rodgers is very much what Patrick Mahomes is now. When Rodgers was at his peak, he was just a phenomenal player. I'm not from Green Bay. I have no ties to Wisconsin, but I have been such a huge Aaron Rodgers fan. But you do have to put things in perspective. He is not the Aaron Rodgers even of a few years ago when he won the back-to-back MVPs. He's certainly not the Aaron Rodgers, you know, when he turned 30. He is a guy who is 40, going to be 41 years old, coming off a significant injury and a high-contact sport at a high-contact position, which every snap that he takes, there are bigger, faster, stronger, younger guys trying to pummel him. And the notion that we are going to see the Aaron Rodgers from even 2-3 years ago, I just don't think I don't think it's fair, frankly. I don't think it's fair to Aaron Rodgers. You know, I think for as great as he's been and for as accomplished as he's been, I think you're going to see a tail off. I think you're going to see a significant tail off. Frankly, if you're being completely honest with yourself and you go back and look at how he played in his final season in Green Bay, he was good, but he was far from the MVP player he was even a year and 2 years earlier. And that's just because he's human. He's old. I mean, look at Peyton Manning. The guy set a record for touchdown passes a couple years ago. He was benched midseason for Brock Osweiler. The cliff does come for everybody. Now, Tom Brady is probably the exception because even though he wasn't great last season, statistically, he was still pretty solid, but he saw a tail off. And I don't want to put anybody in the category of Tom Brady, with no disrespect to Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady. He'll never be Tom Brady. He is still a first-ballot Hall of Famer. But that being said, Brett Favre, first-ballot Hall of Famer. Peyton Manning, first-ballot Hall of Famer. Warren Moon, Hall of Famer. These guys, when they get to a certain age, they fall off a cliff, and they fall off quickly. And I don't know if that's going to happen this year, but I think the notion that you're going to see one of the top five quarterbacks, even one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL – on the New York Jets this season is not going to come to fruition. And this is a guy, this is coming from a guy who loves Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a very good player, mentally probably the smartest quarterback in the NFL right now. But ultimately, time catches up with you, injuries catch up with you, and even if he may not get hurt this season, the hits, the accumulated hits, will take their toll within the course of a game and then from week to week. And I just don't think it's fair to expect Aaron Rodgers to be the elite level player that we've seen for, you know, a decade plus. I think he's going to be a good player. How good remains to be seen. I hope he doesn't fall off the cliff, but if he does, that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I was going to say, that's a great segue that we got. Speaking of falling off cliffs, I wanted to talk to you really quickly about Jamarcus Russell. We're going from a Hall of Fame quarterback, top of the top, to possibly the biggest bust of all time. I read an article recently that he got arrested for stealing, I think it was a $74,000 from his alma mater, as his old high school. The money was supposed to go to the weight room, you know, buying weights and machines and stuff like that. And we have the number one overall pick from, what was it, 2007, if I'm not mistaken, I think was when Jamarcus Russell was taken.
I'll take your word for it. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was a long time ago. We'll put it like that. But the fact that he was the number one overall pick before the rookie salary cap was really put in place. We talked about this before recording. He made how much money? $39 million.
Yeah, in excess of $39 million. And you know, as you said, he has essentially hoarded $74,000 that was earmarked for his high school athletic department. Yeah, it's an unfortunate story. You know, obviously, I don't know where that $39 million that he earned went and how much he still has left. But, you know, to do that is unfortunate, certainly to do that at your alma mater and money that was, you know, specifically accumulated for kids, you know, so they can, you know, work hard and have the best facilities possible so they could one day potentially be in a position that Jamarcus Russell was in, you know, as a college athlete and then ultimately as a pro. Is pretty sad. You know, it's not the first time you hear about a story like this. I'd like to know more details about why he would do something like that. I know that he tried to go to an event later. After that, he was told that he wasn't welcome back. So it's an unfortunate situation. I don't know, you know, what he did with the money he earned, but you know, $39 million, we can all hope to earn a fraction of that in our lifetime. And he had that money again. I don't know what happened to it. But it's inexcusable regardless, you know, doing what he did, you know, to the people who raised that money at his high school.
I was going to say, if you find a way to get 1 million and you want to split that with me, I will not complain in the slightest. So I'm good with a 1/39th of what he made. But no, it's crazy to me. So real quick, I got to get your thoughts on it. Do you consider Jamarcus the biggest bust of all time, or do you still consider Ryan Leaf a notch above him? Because I took a quick look at Jamarcus Russell's stats before we jumped on. He finished his career with 18 touchdowns and 23 interceptions. And I don't even know if he played. I want to say he barely played 20 games, if that. And it's just, I remember watching his rookie year where he sat out long enough that disrupted anything. You hear all the folklore stories about coaches giving him tapes with blank tapes, and he was like, oh yeah, I watched the blitz package, right? And you know, do you consider him the biggest bust in NFL history as far as you know?
I would say in the last 30 years or so. I know there was a quarterback, I'm forgetting his name, in the early 70s, who didn't live up to expectations. You know, Ryan Leaf did get hurt. So you don't know exactly what his career would have ended up like. I do remember Ryan Leaf's rookie season before week one. He was actually pretty good in the preseason. I know preseason doesn't really mean much, but he actually showed some promise. Obviously, his career went sideways. I think he was just immature, emotionally immature. Jamarcus Russell's biggest knock, and I think this is kind of been proven by many, many sources and many, many people around him, is that he really didn't have the work ethic. He really didn't have the desire. You know, you hear the cliche that general managers and coaches are always looking for guys who love football. And, you know, it's kind of just, you know, it seems like it's par for the course in describing draft picks now. Does he love football? You don't even really think about it. You take it for granted. But there's a lot of validity to it, because if you don't love football, you're not going to put in the work. You're not going to watch tape, you know, with that story you just mentioned. You're going to be lazy when it comes to doing the dirty work, the grinding, you know, whether it's, you know, coming in at 6 a.m. at the facility and staying late, later than anybody else. That also has become a cliche. But if you're a hard worker and you have half the talent that Jamarcus Russell had, you can be successful in the NFL. Now, Jamarcus Russell had all the talent in the world. Physically, he was a freak, right? But he didn't have the desire for whatever reason. Maybe it was because he got the guaranteed money when he signed. And you know, money changes a lot of people, and you don't have the drive. You know, I can think of a guy in basketball. You know, I'm from Philadelphia, and Ben Simmons made a lot of money, and he was the number one overall pick, and he didn't have the desire and the drive. I think he liked the money, he liked the fame that came with it, but he didn't want to put in the work. And I think that, you know, that's analogous to Jamarcus Russell. He just did not want to put in the work. And no matter how much physical talent you have, if you don't want to put in the work, it's ultimately going to catch up with you. I mean, you know, in contrast, a guy like Michael Vick, for example, plenty of stories from Michael Vick when he was younger, successful because he was so physically gifted. He didn't really put in the time and the work those first few years in Atlanta. But as he got older, obviously, as he went through a lot of life experiences, he matured, found a new perspective. When he came back, you know, with the Eagles, he had a, you know, I would say he had a career season with the Eagles. And I think, you know, for that little period, you know, he was an extremely hard worker. You know, he was a grinder, and it took him a long time, but he had found success purely based on his athletic skill early in his career, whereas Jamarcus Russell couldn't lean on just his physical skill. He needed to, you know, do some learning and absorbing and reading defenses and comprehending what he was seeing, you know, pre-snap. He just couldn't do it, and he didn't want to do it, and that's why, you know, his career was short-lived and, you know, ultimately very disappointing.
Yeah, no, I just know Jamarcus Russell. I remember that LSU game. I think was they played Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl or something like that, where he threw like six touchdowns, and that was where his draft, just the value for him skyrocketed. And I remember everybody talking about it and just being like, I remember that Sugar Bowl or whatever bowl it was that he played in was really the only big highlight I remember from his senior year at LSU, and thinking like, it's going to be interesting to see how he does in the NFL. And it was just like, oh God, I was pretty relatively younger still, like I want to say like 10 years older or so when Ryan Leaf was in the league. So I'll not to date myself here, but like, yeah, Ryan Leaf, I just thought for the longest time, aside from the injury, was like, okay, he's considered the greatest bust. And you see a lot of guys now that come out that are either the number one pick or in the top five that just go the wayside. Like I even look at Jameis Winston, right? Like a lot of comparisons were thrown his way about Jamarcus Russell with Jameis Winston, but at the same time, Winston at least had the intangibles to throw 30 touchdowns along with 30 interceptions.
I don't think that's fair. I mean, I heard those comparisons. I don't think that's fair. I mean, Jameis Winston has been, average quarterback, just really careless with the ball. Yeah. I mean, he's had a lot of success, but he just also, you know, give it to the other team two or three times a game. And that's what ultimately, you know, killed him. Jameis Winston, for all the knocks and criticism that you can make about his game, it is 10 times better than Jamarcus Russell's game was in the NFL.
Oh, I'm agreeing with you 100%. I'm just saying that you hear the comparisons, and it's I notice more so that it's not very shocking when you see somebody who did so well at the collegiate level that comes out and has all the expectations in the world. And I know I'm setting myself up for disappointment here with Drake May, because we took him third overall, and I have all the expectations in the world. And if he comes out and he's a bust, I'm gonna just be so upset. But you just see that more often than not. But you know what? I want to use this. Look, my segues are on point today with the quarterback thing. So the expectations, we're going to rock this right into our discussion, Manish, with the NFC South. And I want to get right on board. Right now, we have the Bucs being the favorites from last year up until Kirk Cousins signed with the Falcons. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the odds swung in the favor of the Falcons actually being the favorites to win the division now. Is the NFC South going to become a battle between the Bucs and the Falcons? Do the Bucs still have the edge, or are the Falcons the clear favorites now that they have I got to be careful about using the word established, because as good as Kirk Cousins is, he's got one playoff win on his resume.
Yep.
So
yep.
Where are we at? How are we feeling about those guys?
Yeah, I think Kirk Cousins is like Joel Embiid. He can't get past the second round. Neither one of those guys have been to the conference championship and both those guys are really talented players, but
I didn't want to say it. You're the one that said it, okay?
I'm bringing out all the Sixers. Yeah, all the Sixers analogies today. You know, I'm hot and bothered that the Celtics, our chief rival, won the title. I'm sure you guys are really happy about that, but different discussion for a different time.
I was gonna say I could put on the green lights for you if you really wanted me to.
Yeah, hey, look, you know what? Congratulations, you guys had a great team, and my team couldn't even get out of the first round this year, so. But, you know, at least we got an old, aging, injury-prone Paul George now, but whatever.
Perfect.
Yeah, I would say, I would say, getting back to football, I think that the Falcons are, quite frankly, the most dangerous team in the NFC that didn't make the playoffs last year. You know, look, all the teams that didn't make the playoffs, they are the most dangerous team. Now, whether they'll be able to come out of the chute quickly or not largely depends on Kirk Cousins' health. He'll be, I think he's like maybe 8 months removed now from his Achilles injury. So when the season starts, somewhere in the 9-10 month range. And I know rehab procedures are a lot more sophisticated than they were, 10 years ago. But just like we were talking about Aaron Rodgers, he's not going to be fully healed until, probably closer to Halloween. I mean, that doesn't mean he's not going to be able to play. He's obviously, I think, going to be able to play week one. But just how quickly, is he feeling comfortable? He's obviously going to a new place. So he's thrown to, different people, different offensive line, different scheme. Zach Robinson, their new offensive coordinator, coming from the Rams, had a lot of success with Sean McVay. So, I think the scheme is great. I think, frankly, if you look at the entire NFL landscape, there is no better young skill position talent on any team than the Falcons. They've got three incredibly talented players who are 23 or younger, and that's Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson. If you include the quarterback, you can look at Houston in the AFC with C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell. That's another really young, potentially dynamic trio. But when you look at pass catchers, running back, there isn't anybody that I can think of that's got the young talent like the Falcons do. And it's a matter of whether Kirk Cousins can unlock that talent, because these guys, specifically, Kyle Pitts, who was the first of the three drafted, they haven't been able to do much with Desmond Ritter at quarterback, Marcus Mariota. They had Tyler Heinicke for a little bit last year. Much like my look at Garrett Wilson, for example, with the Jets. Such a talented young player, hasn't had the quarterback play to really maximize his talent. Well, I think now that Kyle Pitts, Drake London, who, by the way, was the first wide receiver taken in that Garrett Wilson draft, he was taken a couple slots before, and then Bijan Robinson, of course, drafted last year. I think Cousins can unlock all of those guys. I think all three of those guys can have terrific seasons. Kyle Pitts, to me, is such a special player, and I think if you're a fantasy football player, you're probably disappointed in him because of some of the good but not great numbers that he's put up. But just from a skill set, in real life perspective, he is a dynamic player. I love Drake London coming out of USC. I think he is a great player in waiting. Bijan Robinson, as he has said, the team would like to use him more in a Christian McCaffrey type of role. And that's not even to mention Tyler Algier, who's pretty good complimentary guy, backup guy in the backfield as well. And I think Cousins is good enough, if he's healthy, to bring out the best in those guys. Because when you look at what happened last year, their passing offense was abysmal. I think they had maybe 17, I think it was 17 passing touchdowns, one of the fewest in the league. They could potentially double that this year with Kirk Cousins. So offensively, with those players, with this quarterback, and with a really bright young offensive coordinator in Zach Robinson, I really do think this offense could make significant strides. And then it'll be up to Raheem Morris to fix the defense. He's a defensive-minded guy, also coming from the Rams. I think that they would have been much better served addressing defense with their first pick instead of Michael Penix Jr. I know that we talked about it before. I'm sure Uhlenberg talked about it before. I remember on draft day, I think it was him or you, one of you guys was like floored that they took a quarterback after giving Cousins all that money. I don't think that really makes sense for now. I mean, potentially if Cousins isn't that great, it sets him up well for the next 2 or 3 years, because I don't really know how good the quarterback class is going to be in 2025, 2026. So it's a pick for the future. I would have gone with an edge pass rusher. They need help at cornerback as well. They address that a little bit later, but I do think they're a very dangerous team. And the upshot, not only for the Falcons, but really for the Bucs, Saints, and to a lesser degree, even the Panthers, is that on paper, the strength of schedule is incredibly easy. The Falcons and the Saints are tied for the weakest strength of schedule in the league. Then the third easiest strength of schedule is Tampa. And then I think the fourth or fifth easiest strength of schedule is Carolina. So, the NFC South is playing the AFC West and the NFC East this year, which is a reason why the strength of schedule is, so easy, at least on paper. So, I think that the Falcons have a legitimate chance at double-digit wins. So it's a 10-7 season. That, would typically be good enough in the NFC South to win it. You know, Tampa's won the last 3 years in that division. They haven't won 10 games yet in any of those three seasons. But I do think that if I were a betting man, the Falcons would have a slight edge over the Bucs. But the Bucs, to me, you know, like I call the, you know, the Falcons the most dangerous team in the NFC that didn't make the playoffs last year. The Bucs, it seems like over the last several years, you know, with and now without Brady, they're the most overlooked team. They're the team that it seems like nobody takes them seriously. You know, I know living in Philadelphia that even though the Eagles had lost their last six games, I think, or six of their last seven in the regular season, they entered their wild card game at Tampa, and there was a fair amount of, you know, Eagles fans that thought that they were going to beat Tampa because they're Tampa, right? They're 8-9 or 9-8 every year. They got Baker Mayfield. I mean, how good is he? And the next thing you know, the Bucs beat the Eagles by four touchdowns, and Baker threw for 300 plus yards, three touchdowns, no picks. They are an overlooked team, but they're a really a quality team. And, you know, you and I talked about quarterback bust, number one quarterbacks, Jamarcus Russell, you know, Ryan Leaf. Well, Baker Mayfield, not so long ago, was the number one quarterback. After a pretty good rookie year in Cleveland, he kind of got forgotten. And people thought he was an also-ran, you know, didn't play particularly well in Carolina. Thought, you know, maybe he'd be a serviceable bridge quarterback in Tampa. Well, last year, you know, career high in yards, career high in touchdowns, career high in passer rating. And this is all to say that he has done this without any continuity whatsoever. He's entering his seventh season in the league. This will be Liam Cohen is his new offensive coordinator because Dave Canales obviously left to take the Carolina head coaching job. But this will be Baker Mayfield's eighth offensive coordinator in 7 years. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's more than one offensive coordinator per year. So the turnover has been constant in his career. And say what you want. Look, he's not a dynamic player. He's not one of the top five or 10 quarterbacks in the league, but he's clearly a quarterback that you can win with. And I give him a lot of credit. I had my doubts coming out of college. I thought he was pretty cocky. But that confidence, that still rubs off to this day. One of his teammates just the other day talked about how, you know, how Baker's confidence really bleeds through the entire team. And he is playing good football. You have to give credit where credit's due. And, you know, Jason Light, their general manager, who I think has done a terrific job. This guy has weathered so many storms and you know, kind of just stayed afloat and just keeps winning. Even though it's not pretty, the team keeps winning. Like I said, three consecutive division titles. Tom Brady, he brought Tom Brady aboard. They won a Super Bowl. They went to the playoffs, won the division last year. You know, the Buccaneers are a solid organization. Todd Bowles, another guy, people easy to forget Todd Bowles. What has Todd Bowles done? These guys are maybe boring, but they win. And, you know, they're not the best team in the league, but they're a formidable team. I think they'll be formidable again. And, you know, I think it'll come down to the last week or two, much like it did last year. Last year, both the Saints and Tampa finished at 9-8, and Tampa got the tiebreaker. I think this time around, I think it'll be neck and neck with between Tampa and Atlanta. I don't see either team falling off. And again, this is all predicated on Cousins being fairly healthy to start the season, but like no setbacks with him. I think they're going to be a formidable opponent. And bringing back Baker Mayfield, signing him to an extension, I think it's a $100 million deal, about, I don't know, $60 million or so guaranteed. They brought back Mike Evans, and I thought that Mike Evans was destined for free agency. They brought him back on a two-year deal. So, I think they're a good team. I think they're not sexy, but they're a quality team that's going to make a legitimate run at winning their fourth division title.
Nice. Okay, so for me, it's funny. I am the resident Baker Mayfield hater, obviously, as you can tell, because just the fact that he went to Oklahoma still burns his roots to this day. And I was all about the bashing on him, and I don't want to give him any more love than he needs to get, because that's just not me. I will not do that for him. That being said, I do agree with you 100% that Tampa kind of they surprised me last year, because I thought for sure going from a Tom Brady to a Baker Mayfield was going to have such a dramatic drop off that you were going to see, a losing record was going to win the NFC South last year. That's what I saw coming. And the fact that they were able to do what they did, and I was count me in, not as an Eagles fan, but as a believer, that I thought that the Eagles were going to win that playoff game, because like you said, on paper, the Eagles had all the talent in the world. They could have easily gone to Tampa and romped them the way that they played earlier in the year, despite the losing skid towards the end of the season. But to see what Tampa did, and then I believe, did Tampa play, it was Detroit in the next game?
Yeah, they lost at Detroit in the divisional round.
Yeah, but they still gave them a run for their money. It wasn't like a blowout or anything like that. Right. Like, they did relatively well, and it certainly helps when you have guys like Mike Evans and Godwin and a lot of other really good playmakers on that team. But my question for you is, going back to the whole Kirk Cousins thing with Atlanta, right? So they have tremendous talent at the skill positions with your Bijan Robinson, who I appreciate him. Another Texas boy, Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Yeah, they're all dynamic playmakers. I kind of give pause to giving Atlanta the slide for the division, because if you go back to Kirk Cousins with his time in Minnesota, he had dynamic playmakers around him, right? He had TJ Hawkinson, he had Dalvin Cook, he had Justin Jefferson. So it's hard for me to immediately just say Atlanta's going to run away with the division, especially when they have a quality opponent like the Buccaneers in that division with them as well. And I know a lot of flack goes back to Kirk Cousins' Minnesota days, where he had Aaron Rodgers in the division with him, and then Detroit starting to take the steps that they're doing as well. So I'm curious to see if he can, that 1 year in Minnesota where they really knocked it out of the park. I think they were 12-4. What was that, a couple of years ago? And, you know, phased out in the first round against the Giants, which was just abysmal. I think they were a very imposterous type of team anyway, but like, I'm curious, do you see the potential for any of that rearing its ugly head in Atlanta? Because you don't really think of the defense as much with the Atlanta side down there. You think of all the talent in the world on the offensive side, which they have. But do you see another potential for that, where they can wow you in the regular season and then just phase out immediately in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly possible. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. They do have some work to do on defense. And again, even though Raheem Morris has a defensive background, it's a team that really could use some quarterback help. They only had 8 interceptions. I think only a couple teams had fewer interceptions. They had so many penalties on defense. So Raheem Morris is going to have to clean up that end, you know, when it comes to discipline. So there's work to be done on the defense. So there's a potential that there could be a fair number of high-scoring games, shootouts, in which Kirk Cousins is going to have to win. And when it comes to the playoffs, Hogan, I mean, it really just comes down to matchup. You know, who's hot at the time, who's not? Are you on the road? Are you at home? How are you playing, you know, during that window of time? So, you know, could they flame out, you know, in the first round? Yeah, I mean, sure, I could see that. Could they win a first-round game? Could they go to the conference championship? I could see that. I mean, I don't think they'll get to the Super Bowl, just because I think a team like San Francisco, you know, barring a rash of injuries, and even Detroit, I think they're just, you know, they're better teams, and they're more cohesive teams. And now you got a new quarterback coming into Atlanta. So, I mean, could they make a mini run in the playoffs? I do think so. And would I hold it against Kirk Cousins that he hasn't gotten that far to this point, whether it was in Washington or Minnesota? I don't like to do that. You know, a quarterback goes to a new team. I know what the guy's resume is. I know what has happened to him in the past, but it's a new cast of characters. And I do think that Kirk Cousins is a quality player. I mean, he's a very rich player, but that's a different discussion. You know, I mean, the guy's got an amazing, Mike McCartney's his agent. He's brilliant. I mean, he has played this brilliantly.
Yes.
Over the last 4 to 5 years. But, you know, from a talent perspective, I do think that he is good enough to get to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying he's going to get to the Super Bowl this year. Yeah. But if you look at history and look at the quarterbacks who have made it to the Super Bowl over the last 10, 15 years, he's every bit as talented as, you know, a lot of those guys. So it's not like you can't get there because of Kirk Cousins. If they don't get to the Super Bowl and Kirk Cousins is healthy, that's probably going to be because the defense isn't, you know, ready yet. But, you know, I just don't hold it against him that he had talent at other places and could get it done. These are so many other factors involved. So even though the quarterback gets all the, you know, all the blame when things go poorly and all the praise when things go well, I think it's a little bit more, you know, nuanced than that. So I won't say that the Falcons can't make a deep run because Kirk Cousins hasn't made a deep run to this point at previous stops.
Well, I'll be the guy to judge him for you. I judge the crap out of quarterbacks. Like you said, you heard my take on Baker Mayfield, so yeah. I'll gladly do that for you. But now let's swing in the division a little bit here. So we talked about the Bucs, we talked about the Falcons. Is there any hope on the horizon for we'll focus on the Panthers, I guess I'll say, because they are just such a abysmal team at this point where they gave up the bag, what they did to get Bryce Young. Their game and their play spoke for itself last year. They didn't improve themselves in the draft with what they could because of the bag they gave to Chicago for Bryce Young the year before. Not saying I don't know how their guys, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't pay attention a whole lot to their draft, what they did outside of the first round, because they didn't have a first round pick. But is there hope for them to win a couple more games this year? And then again, how do the Saints kind of factor in? I'm going to be honest with you. You talk about an overlooked team. I always overlook the Saints now, because ever since Drew Brees retired and Sean Payton's no longer the coach there, Derek Carr does nothing for me. And I couldn't, off the top of my head, I know what he looks like. I can't think of the Saints coach's name, but it's just, they're a non-sexy team that aren't going to really do anything for you. And is there any hope for the Panthers and Saints? That's my question for you.
Well, let me start with the Panthers. Let's just start with what they did for Bryce Young. You're wearing the Texas hat. They drafted two Texas kids. You know, Jonathan Brooks, a running back, great player. I mean, really a great player. He tore his ACL in November. Yep. So he's about, what is he about? He's going to be about eight, 9 months removed. So it's going to take him a little time. He's a rookie also. So it'll take him a little time to get up to speed. They also have, obviously, Miles Sanders, who was their big free agent signing, you know, not this past offseason, but the previous offseason, from Philly, Chuba Hubbard. But Jonathan Brooks is the guy who I think can be an absolutely terrific player. It might not happen until second half of this season, or maybe not until second season. They drafted this kid Sanders. He's a pass-catching tight end from Texas. Not really a blocker, but, potentially, a really good option for Bryce Young. And they traded into the first round to take Xavier Leggett, a really strong, tough wide receiver from South Carolina. So their first three picks, wide receiver, running back, tight end. Their new general manager, Dan Morgan, who was their assistant GM, first year on the job, I think he did the smart thing, which is to try to give his young quarterback every opportunity to succeed. He got three young skill position players. The two Texas kids are great. I mean, the tight end, and like I said, Brooks, I can't say enough good things about Brooks. I think Brooks is going to be a great player. And again, it might not happen until 2025, but when he is healthy, he's going to be terrific. And if you also look at what the Panthers did in free agency, they spent about 95 million dollars in guaranteed money on two guards, Damian Lewis and Hunt from the Dolphins, to beat up their offensive line, because Bryce Young was battered last year. He got sacked over 60 times. I think it was his second most for any quarterback behind Sam Howell, who was like pummeled every other snap. So they fortified the offensive line, the interior specifically, in free agency, and they tried to fortify the skill positions through the draft with a running back, a wide receiver, and a tight end. So they're giving – oh, I'm sorry, and I totally forgot. They also traded for Deontay Johnson. So that's an established quality veteran wide receiver. So as opposed to last year when, their number one option in the pass game was an old Adam Thielen. Now you've got Deontay Johnson. You've got Xavier Leggett. You've got Sanders, the tight end. You've got, Brooks, Miles Sanders. It's a much better supporting cast than it was a year ago. So I think that Dan Morgan did a lot of smart things on the offensive side of the ball to give Bryce Young a chance, because Bryce Young was brutal last year. It was only – how much he struggled was highlighted by how much C.J. Stroud flourished. And the fact that they, lost the first-round pick last year, giving it to Chicago to move up to get Bryce Young, just looks that much worse, because they could have the number one pick this year, and obviously they didn't. So, I think that, Dan Morgan has, a lot of digging out to do, and I think he did a really good job on the offensive side of the ball. The defensive side of the ball, there's a lot of question marks. They traded Brian Burns, the Giants, and they got some draft capital for him, but that's a real question mark. So do the Panthers have a realistic shot at competing in the NFC South? You never want to say never, just because the division has been so weak and the division winner typically gets 9 wins. At least that's been the history over the last several years. So I don't want to definitively rule it out. But I think it's highly unlikely that they would be, you know, in play when December comes around playing meaningful games. It's more this year about rebuilding and seeing if you actually have a franchise quarterback in Bryce Young. They're going to have to make a decision on him. You know, this is year two. You know, can he afford to have a year two like he did year one? I don't know. I think it'd be a lot of cost to get a new quarterback if he struggled this badly. But Dave Canales is coming from Tampa, where he obviously did a lot of good work with Baker Mayfield last year. We'll see if he can get Bryce Young, you know, back on track. But it is a new system, second-year quarterback, a new system. It's a hard thing for a young quarterback to do. You know, I saw that with Sam Darnold in New York, you know, early in his career, changing offensive coordinators. It's not an easy thing for any quarterback, let alone a guy who's still trying to find his way in the league. So I think it's a rebuilding year. I do think that they made some wise decisions, specifically on the offensive side of the ball in the offseason. I mean, will they win more than a couple games? Yeah, I think they'll win more than a couple games. You know, on paper, as I said, one of the handful of weakest schedules in the league. So there will be some opportunities for them to win games. But for them, I think this is clearly about Bryce Young finding out if he can actually develop to be a difference-making quarterback, you know, when they drafted him. And, you know, look, they got a lot of pressure on him, not only from fans, but they've got a pretty, you know, combustible owner in Dave Tepper. You know, he wants to see results. He wants to see them fairly quickly. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be any kind of mandate to make the playoffs. I think that's kind of ridiculous for them with a new GM and a new head coach. Clearly a rebuilding year. I think they can make some strides, but I don't think they're going to be a contender to win the division, if I'm being perfectly honest. As far as the Saints go, yeah, I'm with you. The Saints are a very boring team. You know, they're a 7-8-9 win team, it seems like, for like a decade. you know, what I will say is that they did change offense coordinators. Clint Kubiak, yeah, coming over from Minnesota. So I think he's going to inject some creativity, some ingenuity into that offense. Pete Carmichael, I think that offense ran stale. Yeah, if I saw one more Taysom Hill play, I was going to throw up. You know, I know that they found a little bit of success in it, but it was so boring, so unimaginative. I just think that there are so many more things you can do with that offense. They really didn't make great use of Chris Olave last year. Such a talented player. You know, in spurts, you saw that talent. You saw the dynamic ability that he has. But he should have been way more effective and way more involved in the offense than he was. And maybe the part of that is what Carmichael schemed up. Maybe part of it was Derek Carr really not taking a lot of shots. I mean, he was the check down king last year. I don't know if you remember, Hogan, but there was a game last year in which Alvin Kamara had 13 catches for 33 yards. And I don't know if I've ever seen that.
I do remember that because I actually had Kamara in fantasy.
And oh, there you go.
Because I'm a big Kamara guy for like ever. Like that game he had 6 touchdowns on Christmas Day was like, right, my godsend. So that's the thing that kind of drives me nuts about the Saints personally, because they have so much talent on the offensive side with Olave. They have Kamara, Michael Thomas. I know he's taken a massive step back compared to what he used to be, but it's still that team offensively is too good. And I feel like Derek Carr, especially with the flashes he showed with the Raiders for as long as he was there for, he could make that team better, but they just, like you said, they don't do anything extremely well now that Drew Brees is gone. And that's the biggest thing, is Drew Brees was the guy that held that team to such a high standard for as long as he was there for, because Brees alone was always in the MVP talks just because of the stats he put up. But then on top of that too, they were constantly winning the division. I mean, there was no, everybody else in that division was an afterthought. And it makes me laugh because I keep hearing you say they got the easiest schedule. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, if we were playing the NFC South, we'd have an easy schedule too with the way they performed the last couple of years. But it's just, I'll be very curious to see if we end up seeing the Saints put themselves in a position going forward to contest either the Falcons or the Bucks. I can't see it happening. So I guess at this point, I want to officially put you on the spotlight. Give me your predictions overall for the division. If you want to give me records, go ahead. But if not, give me your 1-4 on who we got lined up for ending the year where they're at.
Well, I think the Falcons will win. I think the Falcons will be a 10-7 team. I think the Bucks will be, you know, 9-8 again, potentially 8-9. You know, kind of hovering, you know, not far behind. You know, and you know, I think you had touched on this a moment ago. I don't think the Falcons are running away with it. I think it's going to be a nip and tuck division, close throughout the season. ultimately, I think that in the second half of the season, you will see a fully healthy Kirk Cousins, and the talent is just it's too much. You know, I've watched Pitts for a few years, London for a couple of years, and Bijan last year, and they're just too talented. You know, those are three guys taken, I believe, in the top eight. Pitts was four. I think the other two guys were eight. You know, regardless, top 10 picks. You know, first tight end in that particular draft was Pitts. London, first receiver taken. Bijan, first running back. And these guys are just waiting and bursting at the seams to explode. I think they just need a competent quarterback, a quality player at that position for them to showcase what they have. And it's so dynamic. And, you know, I'm excited. I'm not even a Falcons fan, but I'm excited to see what that offense can do. The only thing that might hold them back is if the defense falters, there could be, you know, a lot of shootouts. But I think that if Cousins is right, that this is an explosive offense, no matter who you play. I mean, whether they're playing an NFC South opponent or a team outside of the division, I think they can put up a lot of points. But the defense is going to keep them from being like, you know, a 12-13 win team. So I'm thinking 10-7 for them. I think you'll see a very similar Bucs team. Again, 8 or 9 wins. After that, I think the Saints probably in that 8 or 9 win range, you know, is there potential for more? I guess I don't think they'll fall off because, you know, for as much criticism as Derek Carr gets, you know, he still manages to keep you, you know, in the game for the most part. And it's a team that struggled last year. Carr took him about, you know, maybe 2/3 of a season to get his footing. They won, I think, 4 of the last 5. So they did play well down the stretch. I think, you know, they'll be somewhat on the fringe, probably right where Tampa is. I suspect maybe a game or so below them. And I do think the Panthers will finish 4th. I think they'll be much better than what they were last year because, again, I am very excited about their rookie class. It's going to take some time. But I think when we look back in 3 years, this is a rookie class on offense with Leggett and specifically with the Texas guys. The Texas guys, Brooks and Sanders, I think can be real quality players. Brooks especially, I think can be like a top-end player, like a Pro Bowl fringe type of player in a few years. And frankly, I think Sanders, if with the right quarterback play, can be, a difference-making tight end. I'm not saying he's going to be Gronk, but you know, certainly a guy that can help you win games. So, I think they'll win more than they did last year. You know, maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 games if things could go right. But it's all predicated on whether Bryce Young is the real deal. And you know, last year didn't instill much confidence, but I don't really think his supporting cast was great. So beefing up the supporting cast with the 2 new offensive linemen in free agency and the 3 rookies, I think, and trading for Deontay Johnson. I mean, I think that, those are some quality moves that, will help to help Bryce Young, and really to help the team evaluate him in his second season.
Okay, so there you got it. I'm gonna go throw all my money on the Falcons winning the division. If you're wrong, I'm coming after you, Manish. I'm doing it. You gave me your prediction, so I'm going with it.
You should see my FanDuel bets. you don't want to follow me.
Well, like I said, if we both win a million, we're splitting it with each other. Burge isn't here, so he's not in on it. So
done. Well, maybe we'll throw him a couple $100.
All right. Yeah. Well, you can. I know him too well. I'm not giving him a cent, so I'll do that for you. Before I let you go, I gotta ask: we got the predictions for the NFC South. We broke down everything going on with that. Do you got any hot takes either within the division or around the league? Anything you want to really touch on really quickly that you want to just throw out there before we wrap it up?
I think this is not something that a lot of people talk about. Let me give you an NFC and an AFC. AFC, okay. Chargers are going to make the playoffs. Nice. A lot of people are, they're down on Justin Herbert, and I'm the president of the Justin Herbert fan club, and I'm, equally as high on Jim Harbaugh. So I think they're a team that will probably make the wild card because I do think the Chiefs will win that division again. But I think that they will make the playoffs. I think you'll see the best of Justin Herbert. I don't know if that necessarily will translate into the most passing touchdowns or the most passing yards he's ever had. But I think you're going to see a smarter Justin Herbert. I think you're going to see a smarter offense, run-based offense, which, might not, be so sexy for a lot of people. But to me, Jim Harbaugh is such a good head coach, for all his oddities and quirks. And I think I mentioned this before when I was on with you guys. I just got so much respect for this guy, turning around organizations, turning around college programs, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're a team that will make the playoffs probably as a wild card. I don't want to bet against the Chiefs, but it wouldn't shock me if the Chargers won the division. But I do certainly think that they're gonna play in the postseason. As far as the NFC goes, look, maybe this isn't like a hot take, but I think that Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. You know, for all his success last year, both in the win column and statistically, he still has so many detractors. You know, they view him as a product of the system. It's all Kyle Shanahan. Purdy's not that good. No, I think Purdy is a really solid quarterback, a top 10 quarterback. I don't think he's top 5. I think he's closer to 10, but somewhere in that, you know, 8, 9, 10. And remember, the guy's only had a couple years of experience in only one full season as a starter. He didn't have a full season as a starter as a rookie. So he's learning as much as anyone. And for all the, you know, all the praise that young quarterbacks like Jordan Love and CJ Stroud rightfully get, you know, everyone assumes those guys are going to grow and develop and evolve, and I'm with them. I totally agree. But for some reason, when the discussion turns to Brock Purdy, it seems more times than not people are saying, well, it was a fluke. You know, he peaked. He's not going to get better. Why can't he get better? Why can't he grow and evolve just like, you know, CJ Stroud, just like Jordan Love, just like, you know, the younger quarterbacks in the league who have had some early success? I think he can do it. Frankly, I think he's in a better position to do it than a lot of these other young quarterbacks because he has an exceptional head coach in my mind in Kyle Shanahan, and he has an exceptional supporting cast around him. The team is great, you know, and I think that can help a young quarterback through the early part of his career, much like you saw with Russell Wilson in the early part of his career. That, you know, the Seahawks didn't rely on him in those first couple years. They relied on an incredible defense, and they relied on an incredible running game. And I think there's no shame in Brock Purdy turning around and handing the ball off to Christian McCaffrey or dumping it off to Christian McCaffrey or throwing it to Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk or George Kittle. Just because you have great players around you doesn't mean that you yourself as the quarterback isn't good. You are good, and it makes these guys make life easier for you. And along the way, you get better as a young quarterback. It just facilitates your growth. And I just think that Brock Purdy is going to have another exceptional season. I think the 49ers, they're going to have a tough test right out of the chute. You know, from a defensive standpoint, they're playing a quality jet defense in primetime week one. So Brock Purdy's going to have, you know, he's going to have a real challenge in week one. But I think he's going to have another quality season. I think he's going to take another step. I know a lot of people think that he's going to just turn into a pumpkin again. I just don't believe it. I believe that he is in such a great environment. I think he's such a smart quarterback. And people sooner or later have to forget when he was drafted. It's irrelevant. I mean, what you see is a young, growing quarterback in a great system with a great head coach and great supporting cast. Don't diminish his talent because the guys around him are good. I think he's, you know, he's due for another really, really good season.
I don't know if you meant it as a pun, but you just said he was irrelevant, and he was Mr. Irrelevant.
That's right. First and foremost,
I love it. I love it. I love the puns. I'm not even a dad, and I love the dad jokes on here, so I love it so much. I know Burgess is not going to appreciate it, but I don't care about him right now. He's not here with us. So, but you know, I agree, and I love the fact that you're throwing the praise on Purdy, because we won't have any 49ers fans coming after us on the show. Yours truly. I don't know if you remember my hot takes on Trevor Lawrence. I got me in some hot water the last few months or so. I had Jacksonville fans, you know, coming after me with pitchforks and torches and whatnot. So now we're going to have you back on the show, and we're going to talk about whether Purdy's better than Trevor Lawrence or not, because that way I can get the Jacksonville fans to come after you instead of me. That's my goal for that at that point. But I think that's going to put a wrap on everything. Manish, as always, thank you so much for joining me today and joining us. As always, it's always a pleasure to have you, and we cannot wait to have you back on here.
Thanks, Hogan. I appreciate it. Good luck with the divisional breakdowns, and have a good rest of your summer. It's all going to start. Training camp starts in a few weeks.
I can't wait, and you know your phone's going to be ringing from both myself and Burgess with getting you back on here. We might have to have that third seat warmed up for you at this point so we can talk every week at this point, because I'm getting excited for football season. But for all our listeners out there, I just want to say thank you for tuning in yet again. As always, we are brought to you by Midnight Ride Productions. If you are interested in anything podcast, blog, live stream, media related, That is the company that we rock with, midnightrideproductions.net. You can contact us through our emails on there. You can see the newest blog that I wrote. I named it after my fantasy football team, Ice Cold Brewskis. Patriots thing. I got to do it. I love it. I rocked it. I threw it out there. So we got that going on for us. Go check out Midnight Ride Productions. And for everybody else, I hope you all have a fantastic week. We will see you soon. Later.